literally cannot stand me. But if somehow we can have a sensible conversation where
Love
one night only
Love
I'm representing Deontay Wilder.
Frank didn't stand it a year ago.
Yeah, I know, true.
There's hope for us all. Probably you couldn't a couple of years ago. But, you know, he's been up and down. Yeah,
former Noodley Clues.
This is actually a common trend for everything. So basically no one can stand me.
That's not true.
So
right,
what
mate.
It was, I wanted Wilder because one, I thought, what a great addition to the card. And two, I think bouncing back from the defeat, I mean, that must have hurt so much, that Parker defeat. He lost the chance to fight Anthony Joshua in a blockbuster fight for a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And I just saw him today. I didn't make my pick till about 20 minutes before the presser. And I had a good chat with Deontay today, like half an hour in a hotel, just trying to reignite the fire. And I saw it in his eyes. He's got it.
When you're in here, you just shift like this, bang, bang. Then you can go back here, bang, bang. Throw your ground in there, don't pull out. Go ahead, do me again, son. Do that. Do it again. Do it again. That's where you gotta punch, when you're in close.
Hey, and welcome back to the number one podcast in the sport, where we always taught 5x5 is 25, but in this case, 5x5 could equal disappointment. And I don't mean necessarily the quality of the card, but you almost got to look at boxing and go, in the quest for that Saudi money, are we heading towards this cliff from which we won't recover for a good few years? And I'll outline my logic behind that later, but it's good value to discuss the announcement of the 5v5, so the Queensbury versus Matchroom, which, oh man, there's so many threads to unpick, but, you know, let's go through them one by one. So the first thing, the announcement. Why do they have masks on? So I'm trying to figure this out. It's worth noting that at some point, people would have known where the venue was, right? And so people would be waiting outside. Did you have to arrive at the venue with your mask already on, or was it supplied at the venue? Because I had no idea the black guy with the dreadlocks and the mask was Craig Richards. Who would have thought it? I had no idea the black guy with the broad shoulders looking about 6'7" was Deontay Wilder. God, who would have thought it? I had no idea the big 6'8" guy who looked a little bit Chinese from the skin tone with the mask on looked was Zhang Zhile. Is it Zhile Zhang? Zhang Zhile? Whichever. So I didn't understand what the mask was for. It almost felt like people being too clever by half, and that sort of thing we don't need anymore. I'd be quite happy now if we stopped all of the gimmicks for this and we just focused on building fights and maybe some of our journalists are asking some of the tough questions. So I decided to you know, look into my network and find some of these tough questions, because what people are asking is, how did Wilder get on the show? That was a Turkey pick. So Turkey said Wilder has to be on this show. And the original plans were for Wilder to fight Hergovich. Right? Turkey, I want Wilder to fight Hergovich. Why? Because we can have Wilder in a world title fight later on in Saudi. Both British promoters are like, no. Why? Because there's a plan that goes, if Fury Usyk happens and it goes the way, whichever way you want it to go, and there's a rematch, and the belts may get scattered, the IBF will definitely be vacated. The hope is to get Anthony Joshua to fight for that belt. And the hope is to get Anthony Joshua to fight for that belt against Daniel Dubois in the UK. That will also be bankrolled by the Saudis. So a stadium fight in the UK will be bankrolled by the Saudis, because that's them bringing their branding into the UK. Because they feel you can ignore Riyadh season when it's in Saudi. You can ignore kind of what Saudi want to do sport-wise when it's in Saudi, but when it's here, the UK media will do all the work for them. So if you go back to the plan, if the plan was always to get Wilder in there and him to fight Hergovich, that would have left Frank with two heavyweights in Dubois and Zhang. that would have been problematic, right? Because you want to match him versus Queensbury, and Hearn hasn't got anyone of comparable quality, if we're being honest. And he was struggling then. So the way you do it is you put Wilder with Hearn, and you say, okay, now you're with Hearn. And so that gives Hearn, Wilder, and Hergovic. And so then they had to rejig the planning so Frank could use his two heavyweights. And that's how it ended up. But really, the fight they wanted was Hergovic versus Wilder, which they weren't able to make happen. But they've kind of got to where they want to get to. So I thought that's kind of one of the reasons behind the delay as well. So really interesting. Oh, let me start again. Really interesting. So when people say that Wilder and Hearn are working together, they've been told to play nicely by the powers that be. They have been told to play nicely. Hearn knows Joshua wouldn't countenance another heavyweight of global stature being there distracting Eddie. I think, you know, Joshua was quite demanding and he wants to be the top guy in Matchroom. So you can understand why. So it'll be a one and done, or it will be by exception only, right? When the numbers make sense for them to work together. Because there's no joy in America for Deontay Wilder. Like, there are no heavyweights in America that he needs to engage with. So he's looking over here like everyone else is. So I thought that was interesting. Also interesting how quickly they were able to spin up Willie Hutchinson. Because I think the original call was to have light heavyweight on the assumption that there were no light heavyweights that Queensbury could kick up apart from Anthony Yard. So let's get Yard involved in a fight. But then they spun up Willie Hutchinson quickly, got him a win, and now he's in the game. So that spectacular win that Willie got was kind of what catapulted him into this. Otherwise, it would have been a lot more pressure for Anthony Yard to be boxing in the 5v5. Now, do not be surprised if that's one of the reasons Anthony Yard is making noise, because he's not happy that all of the Saudi money is flowing into Queensbury and none of it's coming to Anthony Yard, who's an important part of holding Queensbury down while they were rebuilding. Let's not forget that. Here's a guy who put himself in harm's way to fight for world titles in, you know, hostile lands. He went over to Russia and he's fought over here as well. So he's fought Kovalev and Beterbiev. Easily two of the greatest 20 light heavyweights we've seen. Maybe top 25, we'll say. So he's disappointed that he's not part of, you know, the gravy train. And that's why you're hearing the noises he's making about his promotional contract. Now, whether he's going to get paid more to fight Boatsy, I don't know. But the money that was being offered here for Anthony Yard would have been incredible. So I think that was an interesting subplot at light heavyweight, was that kind of play of how do you bring Willie Hutchinson back, and is Willie Hutchinson a guy that could be competitive with Craig Richards? You'd have to say no, because Craig's seasoned now, right? Craig's seasoned, and Willie Hutchinson's not a high work rate guy. And so when you're not a high work rate guy against Craig Richards, it gets quite rough for you, if I'm being honest. You're gonna feel that. So that kind of feels more transaction based in terms of a fight. And then you look at middleweight, which was a bit of a chess game, right? Because really, if you're Hamza Shiraz, you want Felix Cash. That's the name you want. That's the name that cements you potentially, well, does cement you as the number one middleweight in the country, as far as I'm concerned. Let's park Eubank, because I think Eubank's too big for 160. So that was another chess game that happened. So Hamza Shiraz, who do you want him against? Felix Cash. Hearn's like, I might need Felix Cash for something else. So you put Amo Williams in there. Credible enough name. Think in terms of experience, there's only 3 fights difference. Amo's a guy that will back himself, but Hamza Shiraz, too big, too intense. So you'd expect him to be able to do a lot of damage in that sense. And so I think we've covered 4 of them. Now let's talk about the Nick Ball versus Ray Ford. Nick Ball was meant to win his last fight, so that would have made this a lot easier. But he didn't, although the public do still side with Nick Ball. So I think that's kind of what saved that bout in this case. Because there were talks of flipping some of these weight classes in order to get different fights made, but I think they've kind of coalesced around, you know, kind of the original classes, and though these are good showcase fights, and it gives Nick Ball that chance to win that world title. You know, where we previously thought, you know, he got robbed in his last fight. So you understand all of that. So when you look at these fights, you got Wilder versus Zhang. good fight. Crossroads, what, one of those guys is going to go to the moon, one isn't. Dubois versus Hergovic, one of those is going to be in pole position to fight for world title in their next fight, whoever wins. And this is when we find out if Daniel's the guy we thought he was back in 2016. And you got to wish him all the best. I wish Don Charles all the best. Like, in all of this, I don't think Don should be overlooked for the rehabilitation job he's done with Daniel, for the years he's put in the game, the years he's put in to understand heavyweights. And he was never really given the creme de la creme. He was never really given those kind of GB level guys to work with. And now he's got that opportunity. Let's see what he can do. You know, I'm happy for the Dubois family because this is that money that they've needed. You know, and I guess it now reduces the pressure to monetize the rest of the kids. And now the rest of the kids can kind of grow up in relative peace and hopefully fulfill their boxing potential without that need to be overly commercial, would be my take. But I think that could be the sleeper fight of the two because they're both vulnerable guys and they're both guys who are fundamentally sound and can both bang. So that's going to be a good fight. If you look at the light heavyweights, I don't know what to make of it. I think Craig's an overwhelming favorite in that one. Just based on experience, based on how Craig boxes, based on how heavy-handed Craig is. Craig's got a chin. Yeah, there's a lot of upside for Craig Richards in that fight. You know, working with Shane, I think we'll see not necessarily a different Craig, but hopefully a Craig with a higher floor and a higher ceiling. So I'm looking forward to that. Middleweight Hamza Shiraz, look, if I can't bang the drum for Denzel, and I'm gutted that Denzel hasn't caught one of these Saudi checks, if I'm being honest with you, I wish the Heaney fight had gone differently, and maybe it would have been Denzel versus Amma Williams, or Denzel versus Felix Cash in a rematch. But Hamza's got his chance, and this is that kind of time when, in a weak middleweight division, Hamza can put his foot on the accelerator, so we've got to wish him all the best. You know, one of those few times I'm going to say, let's just back the Brit on this one, even though he does train in America. And then if we look at the featherweights, I'm okay with Nick Ball winning. 100% okay with Nick Ball winning that. I think it's going to be a hard fight. But that style that Nick Ball's got, while it's not elegant, it can get you a knockout. You know, that kind of Isaac Pitbull crew style, which is just let your nuts hang. So I think, if you look at that as a standalone card, we'd take that. If someone told you that was pay-per-view, you wouldn't complain. You'd say, I get it. Do you need any preliminary fights? No. You know, don't need to see a Moses Atalma on this one. Don't need to see a Johnny Fisher on this. I don't need to see any prospects on this. Yeah, we want proven operators. Proven operators, proven entertainers. That 5v5 is a card that you can't complain about. Whoever you are, you can't complain about that. As a boxing fan, we've waited a long time for that. The sad thing is, it's taken us all of this pain and drama to get to this sort of level of quality in terms of a boxing card. I don't think it will last. I wish it did. But you have to look at the strategic element. And this is why these cards were easy to predict. I think when the 5v5 was announced, I think I did a show where I said, these are the fights I think are likely. And I wasn't too far off. The curveball was not realizing that Turkey wanted Wilder in there some way, somehow. If I'd known that, then I probably would have, you know, acted accordingly. But the rest of them you could kind of predict because, you know, both promoters need guys to anchor other shows. So you can't put all your crown jewels into, you know, a show that's not really controlled by your promotion. So there were always going to be people who were going to sit this one out. You know, the absence of Sky Fighters on these Saudi shows is also noticeable and a real shame because there's some guys we'd have liked to have seen. There, you know, I think Dan Aziz would have been good value for those. But the game's the game. And we haven't even talked about the main event, have we? Because the main event's really what anchors this. The undisputed fight between Dmitry Bivol and Artur Beterbiev is the one. Like, you got clash of styles, you know, literally, like, we always talk about the Soviet system, but you've essentially got two contrasting approaches to that Soviet system. Like, and they're both very Soviet boxers, and this is why you've got to kind of respect that Soviet system. Because the Soviet system is based on principles and not necessarily defined techniques, you can have Russian boxers that express it differently. And like, let's just group them all as a generation. If you look from Kovalev to Matty Korobov to Buterbeev through to sort of the younger generation relative to them, like Bivol, they all have that style, that ability to use your feet to get in and out of range, that ability to throw those hard, straight punches. But then they kind of deviate. Like, Bivol keeps it straight. He's more of a, I'm just going to suffocate you with work rate, and then eventually I'll get to you, right? Buterbeev's more, I'm going to break you down with consistency. Like, you're going to hurt everywhere. Kovalev was, I'll take you clean out. Which is a bit more like Korobov as well in his amateur pomp. So that Soviet style's produced so many different expressions of it that you've got to respect the style, because in the UK we produce pretty much cookie cutter boxers. I'm going to come on to that later. But we've got those two guys boxing, and people think it's going to be an easy win for Buterbeev because, look at what he's done to everyone else. But you forget... people don't think it's been an easy win for Bivol, not Buterbeev. I think what's going to make it hard for Bivol is Buterbeev seen that all before. For boxers like Canelo, you don't get to see that kind of style very often, so very hard to figure out, but Buterbeev's grown up in that style. He knows how to negate that, how to figure that out. And so the real question is, what can Dmitry Bivol take? Because he's going to get hit. And he's going to get hit a lot. And you're going to see Buterbeev try and trap Bivol in corners, get five or six punch combinations off before Bivol can either tie up or get out, right? And they'll do that dance again and again and again and again. And it'll be about how much can Dmitry Bivol take without his form collapsing. Because if he can survive that storm, he can win on points. If he can't survive that storm, Buterbeev could break him down and stop him. So for boxing fans, this is going to be the best 1st of June since that night in New York when the bubble burst, when Matchroom's dreams of being multi-billionaire promoters went up in smoke. We all remember that. So this will be the best kind of start to June in a long time. I'm looking forward to this. I think as boxing fans, you got to get behind this. There's no point in complaining. You know, this is one of those where we've got what we wanted. And let's just be happy about that. But us being happy doesn't mean we can't talk about certain things. And certain things that can never be allowed to come back. Number one, I never want to hear this thing of crossing this side of the street, that side of the street. What we've established is these promoters can work together. And if we as boxing fans go back to that tribalism of you're either a Frank guy or an Eddie guy, it's our fault. Okay? We don't need to go back to that. So that's the first thing. Now these promoters have to work together. We need to put pressure on Ben Shalom to work with these guys as well. Everyone should be working together to make these fights happen. Why on earth the broadcasters don't put more pressure on, I don't know. But this is what we want. If we want British boxing to be the preeminent destination on the planet, our promoters have to work together. And they've established, all it takes is a phone call saying, look, let's do a deal. I don't want to go back to Eddie Hearn doing interviews and going, just look up Frank Warren's records on Company's House and look at when fighters get paid. We pay our fighters on time. I don't want to hear any of that anymore. I don't want to hear, I've never had lunch with Frank. I don't want to hear anything other than we're working to get these fights done. Because we now know that this is possible. We've had over a year of these fights happening and people playing nicely. We're not going back to the old way of doing things, hopefully. So that's the first thing. For me, that's the most important thing. But the second thing we need to talk about is what this means for British boxing. Like, we're struggling right now. If you think about this, 3 weeks after we get the Undisputed fight and the 5v5, we're going to get Tyler Denny versus Felix Cash as a headliner. Tyler Denny versus Felix Cash as a headliner on DAZN. You're going to get Cameron Vuong versus Jordan Flynn. You're going to get Lewis Crocker on there. The list goes on. I think you're going to get people like Shannon Ryan. You're basically getting not even a next gen card. It's just one of the, like, just, I don't even know what you describe that card as, but we've got a lot of those in this country because the stars are just parked up waiting for that Saudi check. And it's harming boxing because we're not creating domestic heroes which will inspire the next generation of kids to come through. People forget this. In the United Kingdom, not everyone has Sky, not everyone has DAZN, not everyone has BT Sport. The households in which our future boxers exist do not have these. They may have cracked fire sticks or whatever, maybe. But there are tens of millions of people in this country that won't have access to the top tier fighters unless they can jump on YouTube afterwards. But that's not the same thing. And that puts even more emphasis on the need to have local heroes, guys who can entertain kids and say, I want to do what he does. Because that's what's killing the sport at the moment. I watch with interest what Lewis Rees-Zammit's doing in the NFL. So going from being an international rugby player to trying to play for the Kansas City Chiefs. I think it's remarkable, by the way. Like, credit to him for having the stones to do that. What do you think that's doing in the valleys in Wales? Young boys are like, all right, I can do that, but... Do you mean... That's inspirational. I'm seeing young rugby players in the United Kingdom right now going, how can I get on that pathway? The guys who play rugby sevens are like, I can play that level. If Lewis Rees-Zammit can do it, I can do it. That's what visibility does for you. That's what being able to watch the Six Nations on terrestrial TV does for you. Visibility is important. And if we keep delivering mediocre cards in the United Kingdom, we're not going to inspire kids to come through and our pipeline's going to dry up. We need a healthy pipeline in boxing. And that means where boxing can be accessible to the public, we must make it high quality. And I think that's a really important consideration. And probably the third thing I'd like to talk about on this topic is just, we probably need a reversion back to what boxing is really about. Tough men and women fighting each other, testing each other, and showing us that there's something about them that's not quite human. There's something about them that's that step beyond humanity. That's when we connect. We're not long after celebrating the life of Arturo Gatti, and I always go back to Gatti versus Ward 1 and say, if I were to distill what boxing is, and you can talk about big fights, and you can talk about great fights, and you can talk about all of those sort of historic moments. When you really say, what is the essence of boxing? Gatti Ward 1 is what we dream of. Gatti Ward 1 is the kind of fight you want to be involved in. As long as you come on the right side, obviously. And we're what, I can't remember, is it, it's about 22 years ago, right? And I bore people with this story, but if you remember, they showed Gatti Ward 1 on BBC Two, and like a throwaway, like, yeah, we're just going to show you this fight, randomly, right? And if you weren't in that night, you missed it, but this is pre-WhatsApp, so no group chats, you're texting your mates, watch BBC Two now. Now. Because you knew what you were watching was special. And then it went, that was the first boxing fight that ever went viral. So anyone who was of that generation, tell me if I'm wrong on this. It went viral and everyone started talking about this Gatti Ward fight. And this is like the early days of kind of peer-to-peer downloading, and you're trying to find the fight to see if you can find a ripped version of it. You couldn't. So what the BBC did is they played it like a week or so later. They played it again, and like the audience of that was ridiculous, because by that point, every boxing gym's talking about this fight. Everyone's like, yo, I heard about this fight. It was amazing. I heard they went to hell and back. And then I watched it twice. I was like, yeah, the fight was brilliant. That's what boxing's about. All of this, people dressing up as Superman and people talking about their Tourette's and subplots and spending $1 million on a video that's meant to mimic Snatch. All of that stuff is just a distraction. No one has ever shown me that reach and attention drive pay-per-view sales. Fighters drive pay-per-view sales. Ryan Garcia is driving pay-per-view sales. Devin Haney is driving pay-per-view sales. Not the circus around them. Not this person, not that person. Those two are driving it. And we forget this a lot of times. And we need to get back to boxing being a serious sport that serious people do. Because without that, you're never going to separate yourself from the YouTubers. You're never going to separate yourself from all these guys like, what's it, HS Tiki Toki. What's his real name? This Victor Ubogu's kid. God, he must be proud. We need to get back to that. And I don't want to sound like one of those 60-year-old guys saying we need to be, you know, boxing in working men's clubs that are smoky as hell and you're not a real boxing fan if you're not on the path to lung cancer. Nothing like that. I'm trying to say, let's simplify the sport and focus on what people love about the sport. I don't love Eddie Hearn mocking Chris Eubanks' accent. I don't like Frank Smith taking... I don't like none of that. Even when Frank does it, I don't like it. It's not becoming. Yeah? Let's start running a serious business in a serious sport. And let our figureheads be the leaders. Like they are, like... Is it still Roger Goodell in the NFL? You know those guys who are up there? And you don't see them taking shots. They remain professional at all times. They let the athletes drive the value of the business. And that's how it should be. I want to switch gears because I've got you guys' attention anyway, right? So I just want to talk about something because I think this is very, very important. We've just kind of gone through the quarterfinals and the semifinals for the National Amateur Championships, right? So it used to be the ABAs. And across both men's and women's weight classes, London has 6 finalists. 4 women, 2 men. And that's a terrible return. If you consider how many clubs you have in London, and if you consider how many boxers you have in London, we should really have half the finalists every year, at least. I'd argue we should have half the winners every year. And every year, London fails to deliver. Yeah, it does. And I'm saying this knowing that I've got friends that are included in this. But it wouldn't be right and it wouldn't be fair for me not to speak the truth. Well, let me say the truth as I see it. I had 3 kids that, to varying degrees, I'd worked with, right? Tyrese, Elliot, Mo. 2 quarterfinalists, 1 semifinalist. I think that they're good achievements and they should be proud of themselves. And from this position now, I'd be done with the amateur system and I'd be thinking about going pro at this point. Path of least resistance. But those guys should all be in the final. On skill, on talent, on consistency, all the things I like about boxing, those guys should be in the final, but they're not in the final. And the reason they're not in the final, and the reason why London struggles to exert dominance in the amateur scene like it used to, there are a number of factors, the split, the lockdown, but the lockdown affected everybody. Okay, lockdown affected everyone. The split didn't. And we're still living with the consequences of the split because we'd quite like the Lynn back. Do you know what I mean? We'd like the Lynn to, I mean, be part of this. We all missed clubs like the Lynn. So we'd love to have them back. But here's the thing. London is this really weird bubble where coaches don't step out of London. I have, over the years, whether it's been Empire, Alliance up in Leeds, Sheffield Boxing Centre, clubs like Lee, Burtley, clubs where, like, I'll go in, Nick Manners' place up by Rawls Gym in Leeds, And I'll go and I'll watch how these Camp Detox. Let me shout out to Danny Thornton and Camp Detox too. You see all of this, right? All of this observation and being around some of these guys. Earl Shilton. I always say that one wrong. Small Heath. All of these clubs I've sort of popped into and had a look at and looked and analysed and gone, what are they doing that London's not doing? And do you know what they're doing? They're grafting. London boxing is not, graft. We don't have grafters. We had one, the kid out of St. Pancras, boxed at 60, Jermaine Luayo, the Zimbabwean dude. He's a grafter. No flair. No flair. All work rate and intensity. There's a reason why he was seeded number one. In London, you will get the most skillful people. You will get the broadest expression of boxing styles you will see anywhere in the country. On God, we don't work hard enough when it comes to fight night. We're trying to be too skillful, too clever. And so as I reflect on this, I go, what's the root of the problem? And I've said it before and I'll say this again. Most coaches in London, and maybe this is true elsewhere. If it's true elsewhere, feel free to get in touch and say it. Most coaches in London are trying to teach their amateurs to box like pros. Why? Because they only watch pro clips. Like most of the coaches in London just steal stuff off the internet. I'm in enough group chats to see what people are sharing. It's just stuff stolen from the internet. And the thing about stealing stuff from the internet is you don't actually understand the mechanics of why it works. I don't know if anyone remembers when James Toney was here for Prize Fighter. I asked him that. And I've asked him, I've asked Mayweather, and I've asked Shannon Briggs. Did you box the same way as a pro as you did as an amateur? No. What was the difference? Amateur boxing is a sprint. Yeah? You can't let the other guy get one punch in. Same message from all of them. Yeah? Whereas in London, everyone's trying to create a James Toney. Everyone's trying to create a Gerald McClellan. Everyone's trying to create a Floyd Mayweather. In the amateurs. And at no point have they asked themselves, how do you engineer what I'm watching on YouTube into something that works in the amateurs? No one has these discussions. So what ends up happening is these kids end up just boxing at half amateur pace. Now, when you go up north, when you go to the Midlands, when you go out to the West Country, they're training their kids to go to 100 miles an hour. There's no shoulder roll. If there's a rare exception of Ben Whitaker, for example, yeah. But people forget how hard Ben works in the ring. Yeah. All those young guys, that the M1 corridor where the Ingle effect's still there. But look at how hard those kids work. Work rate is through the roof. I mean, they're doing three mile jogs uphill regularly. This doesn't happen in London. So those guys, when they're being coached, here's the really narrow avenue of stuff that works in amateur fights. Here's what wins you titles, guys. We're just going to do this because we're an amateur club. We're going to do this because this wins. It won 10 years ago, it'll win 10 years from now. This wins you amateur bouts. They do that, and then they sprinkle that spice of, you better give it to those Londoners. You better let them know they're not the top dogs. That's why Londoners get outworked. Every fight, they get outworked. It's as simple as that. So all the times I sit and I watch everything. I just watch it because I'm trying to learn and understand myself. And look how many people you know who are boxing coaches. And all they do is they post boxing stuff like they're this really knowledgeable oracle and ball of wisdom. They post, and then I look at it and I'm like, but your boxers can't do any of that. You're posting Roy Jones Jr. throwing triple and quadruple hooks. Your boxers can't do any of that. Why are you posting that? Because if I'm one of your boxers, I'm looking at that going, my coach is posting stuff on their social media that I can't do, that he can't teach me. I'm never going to be that good. That's demoralizing. And people don't realize this because there's a thing, and if it's different outside of London, tell me. Everyone's trying to be really clever in boxing. And just to go back to Adam Martin, reminded me of this Mick Carney quote. Boxing's not rocket science. When I talk to my guys in the gym, I give them a very simple message. You don't get to be skillful until you can outwork your opponent. If you can't outwork your opponent, you have no right to be skillful. You haven't earned that right. And that's how we train. I haven't seen that in a long time in London. Guys with a relentless pace, a relentless work rate. One club that does do that a lot, and I'm going to give them credit, I don't want to, I really don't want to, is Earlsfield. I've watched Earlsfield for years going, I don't want to train my kids to box like that. Nah, not like that, not like that. But they can win. Why? That style just, you have to be really, really, really good to beat an Earlsfield fighter. Because they just keep working. Workhorses. London doesn't produce enough workhorses. And I know that doesn't sound sexy and glamorous, but the amateurs isn't meant to be sexy and glamorous. It's where you learn to be a workhorse. You throw more shots, you make more decisions, you make more mistakes. So when you turn pro, we can dial everything back. You got more time. Now all those skills that you could do at 100 miles an hour should look incredible at 70 miles an hour. And I'm watching this because I get disrespected and disregarded when it comes to who's really doing it as a coach in London. People don't give me the credit I deserve. I can guarantee you this. No one's outworking my guys. Like, level for level, you're not outworking my guys. I don't even think you're outskilling them. Why? Because I care about what wins amateur bouts. And then when I work with pros, I care with what wins professional bouts. And the two things are very separate, and you've got to have a separate mentality for them. That's why if you notice on my thing, I don't share a lot of boxing content because I look at something boxing-wise and I go, can I get my guys to do this? Nah, park it. It's not important. It's not good branding for me. And I see this, man. It frustrates me where people show stuff. Professional boxers do this, right? They'll share clips of James Toney. They'll share clips of, I don't even know, man, Duran. They'll share clips of Wilfred Benitez. I'm like, but you can't do any of that. So you're telling me as a professional boxer where this is your job, you're showing me a skill set you are not capable of doing. You're showing me a level you are incapable of reaching. And you're still trying to do this as a job. Where's your ambition? Why are you posting stuff you can't do? We all need to stop doing this. Because the public see right through it. And I keep saying that London boxing will not dominate again until we get our workhorses back. And it's not going to be sexy and it's not going to be glamorous. But that's how you dominate. That's how your kids end up in GB. Workhorses that are coachable. It's not pretty, it's not glamorous, but we need that. Because I look and I say, if you took all the coaches in London and said, how many are capable of delivering championship level boxers? 20% tops? And the average age of those guys is probably 55. Why? Let me tell you why. Too many kids coming into this coaching thing now learn their stuff on the internet. And so they don't understand the underlying philosophy behind anything. They don't understand why things work. They just copy and paste. And that's okay. But if you don't know why something works, you can't tweak it for your fighter. You just can't. If you want to know how good a trainer is, look at the content they post. If they post 15, 20 punch pad routines, write them off immediately. The minute you hear tap, tap, The minute you see that, write them off. Unfollow them, block them. Any coach you see doing that, write them off. If it's not Roger, and if it's not Floyd Sr., write them off. I will put GT in there as well. Write them off. They don't know what they're doing. They've just copied that. They don't know the philosophy. Now, put Tunde in there as well. Tunde's had enough time to understand his own philosophy and how to do that. But they do that because that's the only way a coach can show you he's competent. But there's no value in that. Definitely not in the amateurs. And I'm just talking amateurs right now. There's no value in that. Notice that's very rare. You see a coach on video stopping sparring, correcting a fighter, explaining what he's doing wrong and why, and saying, here's how you fix it. Crack on. Do that. It's rare you see that. Why is that? Not many people can do it. So imagine you're going into the stressful situation of a fight. And it's only at that point you realize your coach is going to tell you to keep jabbing because he doesn't know anything else. He doesn't understand why you're going through what you're going through. He has no idea. He can't do the diagnostics. He hasn't been through that process. He hasn't done that education to understand. She hasn't done that either. They don't understand. They don't understand how to run a gym. Most people understand how to run a club because it's a process. Most people don't know how to run a gym. They don't know how to peak for tournament season. They don't know how to break their season into phases, the development phase, the execution phase, the performance phase. They don't know when to peak. They don't know any of these things. And these aren't hard things. These are things that the old timers showed us. Make sure you're right between March and May. Nothing else matters. That's why I respect guys like the Rumbles. Every season you see those guys show up, win their medals. Pinewood Star, figure it out every year. Do you see what I mean? You got Jennings Gym up north now who are doing that. Nigel Travis at Moss Side, he's doing that. And we don't have that in London. People don't know how to run gyms. They don't know how to educate their boxers. They don't know how to diffuse the knowledge and experience to help like build a club where actually the boxers help each other get better. People don't understand the underlying philosophy behind sparring. They don't understand when you should spar hard, why you should spar hard. They don't understand when you should pull your kid away from the front line and just focus on some technical stuff. There are all these things that people don't understand when it comes to running a gym because they've never come up in that environment. That's why you see guys go on the internet. For me, you go on YouTube, you steal ideas of other coaches. You do all of this stuff where you don't believe in yourself, where you don't have a firm vision of how you want people to box. But you need that. It need not be sexy. It need not be cool. It just needs to work. And right now in London, we don't have enough of that. Yeah. You've got people who are basically boxing trainers because they had access to a gym. They had the money to get a gym. And so now they're trainers. There's no other reason that they are trainers. I can't remember who I was talking to. I think I was talking to Alfie Warren and I said, what we need to do as part of this Box Nation thing, and I'm up for this, get 5 coaches. Don't even care. Amateur, pro, get 5 coaches. I will sit there too. And let's find out who really knows their stuff. Let's find out who knows their stuff. I'd do that with Adam Booth. I'd do that with absolutely anyone. I am telling you now, guys, you will be surprised at who falls off. You'll be surprised at who turns out to be hollow. A lot of people in boxing are carried by the fact that they have access to strong athletic fighters. They just have access to better raw materials. That's why you got to respect some of these kids from like Poole or Taunton, Tiverton. You know those sorts of random locations who make it to the quarters and the semis. And you're like, but these kids didn't have, you know, crack wars and postcode wars. These kids came from Nice homes with a garden and stuff. They didn't come from estates. And look, they're still here. Why? Workhorses that are coachable. Not glamorous, not sexy, it wins every time. London needs to move away. And let me say this again. All the flashy, skillful stuff that is taught in London is valuable, by the way. But it's not valuable until you teach your kids to work like dogs. Because that's what wins you fights. Working like a dog earns you the right to be skillful. And right now in London, we put the cart before the horse. And so I'm heartbroken that my friends didn't make it to the finals. I'm heartbroken that my friends that are coaches didn't get that accolade on their chest. I'm genuinely heartbroken. But if London as a whole doesn't use this time for an honest reflection and every individual say, am I part of the problem or part of the solution? We ain't going to get better. But we need to stop sharing stuff that we can't teach. We need to stop sharing stuff that we can't do. Because all it does is show how bad some people are. That's all I can say. We need to stop doing that. And we need to focus on what we are good at. Workhorses, dogs of war, that have a nice layer of skill on top of them. That's all this game is. That's just a sensible point for me to tap out and say, enjoy the rest of your day, guys. And all, as always, if you enjoy it, share it. If you feel someone needs to hear this, make sure they hear it. Because knowledge is there to be shared. And I'll say take care.